Welcome to RSN's Racing Pulse.
Maria Mayer in front from Uncommon James Cannonball, and Maria Mayer wins the Group 1 Galaxy.
Lofty Strike over the top. What a good return. Lofty Strike has won it.
And the big eye Animo puts the head in front. Rattling home is Fangirl. Animo's George Ryder. Animo beat Fangirl. But Shinzo and Ryan Moore are drawn clear to win the Golden Slipper.
Mr. Brightside up to Alligator Blood. Cascadian Lake. Mr. Brightside in front. And Mr. Brightside has won the ball.
For the next 3 hours, the breaking racing news, the stories, opinion, the mail, and the people who make racing happen. Here's Michael Felgate.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Pulse on this Monday, the 27th of March. I hope you had a great weekend, maybe a winning weekend. It certainly seemed to be a favourites weekend from Friday night and the favourites winning the big races over the weekend. So hopefully you finished in front. Some great racing, some interesting racing, not just at Flemington and also Rose Hill, Moonee Valley Friday night, but overseas as well. The Astrologist going oh so close over in the Alquaz Sprint. And I think we may have seen the best horse in the world over there as well. Mick Sharkey will tell us more about that a little later, but we've got plenty to get through. It was a day out for Ben Mellum, Cascadium winning the Australian Cup. We'll have a chat to Ben today. A great moment too for Geordie Childs. Did we see the Melbourne Cup winner on Saturday? Maybe we saw the Cox Plate winner as well, Prowess in Sydney. What a stellar season they are having, the Kiwis taking all of the Aussie dosh as well. We'll catch up with Troy Corson's on that gutsy win or gutsy runner-up performance by the Astrologist. And Troy, unfortunately, he's been in the wars himself again. Not good news there. We'll reveal a bit more when we speak to him close to 10 o'clock. And Michael Kent Jr., the hype was right. What you need could be the next sprinting three-year-old star. Mick Sharkey, Matty Stewart here to talk all about it. Good morning, gents.
You're right. It has been where do you look type thing. And I think working our way down, I think Goldman was, as I look, I'm hanging myself out to dry, but I've never seen a better Melbourne Cup candidate so far out.
This is what you said a little while ago, or just maybe an hour ago. So we've etched this into the record books.
If it doesn't step on a rusty nail, Goldman will win the Melbourne Cup.
So there you go. 27th of March, we have the Melbourne Cup winner.
Well, all I'm saying is, because we all know there's risk and there's time and all that sort of thing, but minimum, he's in. He's a right. He could be absolutely anything. Funny that he came on the scene the same day as Incentivise departed the scene. Who knows what the limit is? He's already in the field. He's got no weight. The Europeans aren't coming in any great number. Shark, can you remember a better candidate this far out from
Surprise
Melbourne Cup?
Surprise, baby.
Was he a better candidate?
Yep.
And no,
he should have won
disagree.
That Melbourne
Surprise
Cup.
Surprise Baby was an Adelaide Cup winner by an absolute.
Have you seen the recent winners of Adelaide Cups?
Well, what was that? What was in the Roy Higgins that was of any? Swords Drawn's run third.
I'm just going on.
I'm with you.
I like what I saw. I saw.
I'm with you. I love the way he won. I like the way he's going. But it is.
He might have six lengths improvement in him.
He might.
He looks like he does.
Hey, we'll talk more about that. I want the listeners to tell us, is he the Melbourne Cup winner after 9 o'clock, 0-4-1-6-90-50-52, because that was pretty much the only race that Ben Mellum didn't win. So we want to start the program with Benny, who had a great day, and it was a cool, calm ride on Cascadian to win the Australian Cup.
New Marion at the 250, led by a link, Spoken Romans. He's a shocker, pounding Campion, Nessa and Nonconformist. New Marion at the 150, pounding is picking it back, and Cascadian late. Here's Cascadian, right over the top of them, up to New Marion. Cascadian, it's the Cummings name again in the Australian Cup. Over the top of New Marion, pounding third, photo fourth, Spoken Romans. He's
yes,
a
Bart
shocker.
Won 13 Australian Cups. James Cummings winning with Cascadian on Saturday. It was the type of race, Sharky, where we spoke about it on the Friday. He's the obvious. If you didn't back Cascadian after the race, you're probably giving yourself a smack across the face saying, how did I not back that? He was the best horse in the race. All he needed was a good ride, and that's exactly what he got from Ben Mellum. Morning, Ben. Well done on a great Saturday.
Morning, fellas. Yes, thank you. It was a great day. I had a good book of rides, and yeah, lucky to come out with three winners.
Ben, when you're on a horse that's obviously he's the best horse in the race. He was the best horse in the field on Saturday, but you know, he starts to get cluttered up at a critical stage. You want to be out and flowing on the horse. From a viewer's point of view, a punter's point of view, there's those nervous moments and yelling at the TV. What's going through your mind? Are you as cool and calm as you appeared to be?
I was, actually, to be honest. That was always my plan. And I just going through his replays, looking at his previous runs at Flemington, he's been out and exposed. And, you know, I just don't think it suits him making a long run there, and probably hence why he's never won there. So James and I come up with a plan pre-race that, you know, we would ride him back and in, and I did have an opportunity at the half mile to come out into the three deep line, which I suppose from a viewer's or a punter's perspective, you'd be watching it and go, well, why didn't he pop out at that point in the race? But, I stayed in on him for that reason. The speed was good, and I had the fancy, or what I thought were the chances in front of me. And I just needed a little bit of luck, but I was able to suck up, not cover any extra ground, rounding the turn, suck up behind that fast speed. And I just had to rely on the horse a little bit, but, you know, watching all his tapes and having the benefit of riding him the start prior in the All-Star Mile, I had confidence in the horse that he could pick up when I needed him. And he can sprint off a dime. So it was a really impressive win.
I was going to say that All-Star Mile sit then was critical, because, you know, when you're putting your faith in a horse to be able to overcome that difficulty a week before, you sort of would have been in the back of your mind, okay, I know how good he can finish. It's just giving him the opportunity to.
Yeah, exactly right. And that's why I sort of really enjoy riding for James. He's, you know, he's very astute with his form, and he obviously drew right off the track. He drew 15 or 16 or something in the All-Star Mile, and he's not a brilliant barrier horse, so our plan there was to go back, and again, we didn't think he could win going around them, so we had to ride him for luck, and he was either going to run really well or run really well without any luck, and either way, he was going to pull up cleanly from the run. He had a terrific run through them, and not often you'd get a horse bounce out of a race of that quality in the order he did, but that was probably due to the run in trans that we had in the All-Star Mile. He was able to suck up along the rail and just come out the last little bit and run over the top of him and just miss. So the horse ran exceptional there, and James had in the back of his mind that the backup into the Australian Cup. So yeah, it panned out perfectly for us, and obviously the horse had a quiet week in between the All-Star Mile and the Australian Cup, and going to the barriers, I could just tell he was on. He was, you know, he's an old gentleman to ride, but he was really keen going to the barriers and really alert and on his toes. So that gave me even more confidence to ride him in the manner that I did.
If he was a family dog, he'd be a Labrador, wouldn't he? He's just got that sort of personality. Ben, there was some interesting social media. It's interesting what you just said about to the average viewer, they may have said, well, why didn't you come out? Why did you stay in? And there was a bit of discussion on that on social media with Brad Davidson and a few others who, after I sent out a tweet about what a great ride it was, because you can't ride Cascadian like a champion, can you? You have to take a few risks in order to finish off. So that's why you dive back to the inside and ride for a bit of luck, because he can't sustain the winning run like a Winx, can he?
Yeah, well, that's the thing, Matty. With Group 1s, they're hard to win, and it's just the, you know, it's the one percenters in your form and stuff like that, that can make a difference. So, like I said, I could have easily popped out and get what appeared to give him every chance at the half mile and bring him to the outside, but I just wasn't confident. As it panned out, it probably wouldn't have mattered, but I've just seen him do that so many times and not close. So, yeah, he really thrives on that ducking and weaving, and it really makes him enthusiastic to the line, and that showed on Saturday. He picked up, and his last furlong was really sharp.
Ben, it was an amazing set of blinkers you put on yourself on the weekend, and to ride to your talent. There's been so much swirling on in the background. There was the hand grenade you chucked at the racing industry. There's your partner who's in a very worrying state at the moment in hospital. There was your best mate, Ethan Brown, who had something similar. So it's required a very steely ability to separate yourself from what else is going on in your life to focus on the job at hand like you did at Flemington.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting point, Matty. It's something, you know, riding in a race and especially good quality races like that, you can't afford to let outside, you can't have any outside interference. And that's one thing I'm good at is, you know, really blocking out what's going on outside and focusing on the job ahead, because, you know, not only is it a dangerous profession, but there's a lot of money on the line for owners and trainers and things like that. So, you know, if I wasn't right to ride, I wouldn't be riding. So that's one thing I'm, you know, I was confident that I was in the right headspace and I had good rides and good opportunities, and I felt I gave them all every chance, and it was good to come away with three winners. But like I said, it's just getting under race conditions. You just have to block things out and get on with the job ahead.
Just on the discussion of last week, which you preempted with the tweet, you basically ignited it, and I think it's been a really good open discussion. How have you seen the two in and froing, or the for and against for what you came out and said, re jockey fatigue, the amount of racing, the hours in the last week?
Look, firstly, I guess the point I was getting at was, I'm not saying that all those falls were caused from fatigue, but what I'm saying is the hours we're working are very long, and obviously fatigue and tiredness, people make mistakes when they're tired, and that's just basic science. The way we're heading now as an industry is they're just getting more and more demanding, the hours, early mornings, late nights, consecutive days in a row, and it's just, I just think it really needs to be reassessed, especially my main concern was with the night meetings and people backing up track work and just long days. But it's not as easy as saying don't go here or don't go there, because obviously people have stables and owners and clients and stuff that they have to appease to, you know, keep getting the support from them. But I just think that we really need to have a look at the amount of night meetings scheduled moving forward, and not to mention people have families and stuff as well that they probably wouldn't mind seeing every now and again.
Mick and Mel Sell were part of this discussion. We're going to have a chat to Mel Sell, partner of Mick Sell, the trainer, a little bit later on the Big V today, about her take on this, which is a refreshing one, which is a little bit against what you're saying, Ben, to a degree, but she's talking more from a trainer's perspective than a jockey's perspective. Would you, even though it would hit your hip pocket, if there's things that can be done, there's a lot of things that are hard for the racing industry to control, but they can hit jockeys harder for interference. And I think Danny Brereton came out and said that. Would you be happy to be subjected to a much tougher penalty regime for careless riding for the greater good?
Well, the thing is, Matty, if people are getting there and they're not mentally and physically fatigued, they're going to make less mistakes. So. Yeah. I think you'll find there'll be less interference. And I will make point too that I'm not talking about reducing people's ability to earn and restrict their rides, because race riding is actually the easy part of our job. We jump on a horse for 5 minutes. You might have four or five rides or whatever. It's the lead up to that, the early mornings, that, you know, straight to the gym, to train, to the sauna. And the traffic's a big issue now in Melbourne. There's a lot of traffic, and it takes people a long time to get to and from the races. You know, your whole day's gone before you get to a night meeting. All of a sudden, you haven't stopped since 4 or 5 in the morning. Then you get to the races where you can finally earn your first bean for the day. And people are quick to throw mud at you if you do make an error or something on an ordinary ride, but. You know, that may be because you're tired, and yeah, like I said, so it's back to your question in relation to bigger penalties. I just think you'll find there's less interference if you've got jockeys that are more mentally alert.
Just on that, you rode in the William Reid on Friday night. It was a pretty bloody rough race. And I know Obie Bossom and Nash Rewilla got suspended. They're not two Victorian jockeys, but is it almost when you get to these big million-dollar races that there is a little bit more not carefree attitude, but it can get a bit more willing?
Look, obviously, well, to start with, the races were obviously it was on late at night, the race meeting. Again, you know, fatigue could have come into that a little bit to a degree as well. But obviously, Group 1s are, you know, everyone is a little bit more willing, and it's just it's the nature of the beast. Everyone's determined to win, and it's definitely not a win at all cost attitude. But you know, I suppose people would maybe take more risks within reason. But yeah, it was rough, and the stewards did come and they come and spoke to every rider individually at that race meeting. You know, just to make sure everyone errs on the side of caution before making decisions in the run. And as it's panned out, yeah, Nash Rewilla and Opie Bossom got suspended for the race. But it was a little bit rough, but I'm not sure why.
Ben, Matt Hyland made the point with us on a few occasions in our chat last Monday that, you know, scheduling, workload, it's up to the individual jockey to manage that themselves. And, you know, they're running themselves as a business, per se, so if it's up to them, basically, to take care of themselves. What do you think... or how well do you think your peers are managing themselves? How are you finding the battle in juggling, you know, jump out commitments, look, racing, travel, everything else? Is it easy to do?
No, it's not easy to do. I'm probably in a little bit of a fortunate position where I do manage my time, but there's times where you just, you know, you can't say no because these people, these loyal people that have been supporting you, they'll need you there. And you know you pretty much have to be there. Or if you're not there doing the work, the next bloke will be. And there's blokes out there that work a lot harder than what I do. But I'm not considered a lightweight jockey, so pretty much I have to manage my time. But I still find myself, even whilst managing my time, track work and trying to build a client base and keep a client base. Yeah, it does. It gets difficult, and sometimes you do just have to say no, but it doesn't come without consequences.
Hey Ben, I want to ask you about what you need, but you mentioned Jamie Carr a couple of times post-race after your wins on Saturday, especially considering she won a Group 1 on Cascading as well. She would have been proud of your ride in the Australian Cup. Was she able to watch the races on Saturday? How is she doing?
Yeah, look, she's actually, the last couple of days I've seen significant improvement in her. She's supposed to be resting and not watching too much television and that kind of stuff. But she's getting very frustrated because she's, you know, she's an outdoors kind of person, and she's locked up in a room doing her rehab. And, yeah, she's been sneaking the racing.com channel on, and she's been getting in a little bit of trouble for that because she won't turn it off. So the last couple of days have been really good. And yeah, she's just taking the necessary steps, obviously from doctor's advice. And I can tell you that she's certainly looking forward to getting home, and hopefully that's shortly she's home, hopefully.
And hopefully, it's an impossible. There's no answer, obviously, Ben. But would you imagine that you'd see Jamie back doing what she does in the next 6 months or so?
Oh, there's no time limit on it. And you know, with brain injuries, they're all different, and people recover at different periods, different times. And that's not even a concern at the minute. The concern is just getting her back to full health and then reassessing. But even the doctors haven't given us a lot of information on time frames, and you know, it'll just be step by day, step by step, and she'll be ready when she's ready.
Just on you, I quoted I think you'll know who the champion jockey was, who I quoted, but when I asked him a few years ago now who the best jockey was, and he said, ask the jockeys and they'll all tell you, it's Malham. So it's like asking who's the best cook. You just ask the chefs, don't you? But your career's been a bit roller coastery, injury and time out and so on. Do you feel like this is your time now? This is you got clear air. Obviously, there's a few issues with Jamie and so on, but you're able to block them out. Is this the big 12 months for you? The clear 12 months to 2 years now for you?
Oh, for sure, Matty. I think there's no doubt I've matured a lot over the last just of recent times, and the last 2 years, I've sort of missed the spring and the autumn through suspensions and injuries, and that's probably why I've been a little bit quiet. But it just takes a while to rebuild your momentum and gather some horses that can take you somewhere and just get a bit of quality around you. So I seem to have a few horses with some quality around me, riding for some good stables. It just takes a while to build momentum, but certainly winning Group 1 races for good stables like the Cummings Stable and Godolphin and Pricey and all the guys that use me. So it's hard to get anywhere unless you've got any quality horses, but you don't get the quality horses unless you do the work to get there. So I feel like I've finally built some traction and some momentum, and hopefully it can continue on into the Sydney Autumn Carnival.
Speaking of quality, how good is What You Need?
He's a very good colt. I've had a great opinion from him from day one, and it was no surprise to see him win Saturday. I was pretty confident he'd win. Even though Benedetta was in the race, I think take nothing away from her. She's a good filly, and even the second horse ran really well. But he won with something in hand on Saturday, and he had his ears pricked going to the line. And obviously, he's got a more solid test next start in the Arrow Field in Sydney with some of the better 3-year-olds up there in Sydney. So I'm sure he'll acquit himself very well, and I'm pretty confident he'll stamp himself as a very good horse.
There was Callus as well, but I want to ask you about the one that I can't stop thinking about. you're on Allegron in the Roy Higgins. What was it like looking at Goldman's potentially Melbourne Cup winning bum get further and further ahead of you?
Yeah, well, he was in a class of his own on Saturday. He was very impressive, and I think from a Melbourne Cup perspective with that horse, the thing I noticed significantly was after the line
he didn't stop, did he?
He got further and further in front, so Geordie couldn't pull him up. He rated him well in front. He increased the tempo gradually from the half mile, and he just held his gallop, and staying the trip certainly not going to be his issue, I wouldn't have thought.
Benny, what a weekend it was. You absolutely slayed him on Friday night with Cirilio Miss, who's flying in the sunline. Bella Nipotena ran out of his skin second in the William Reid, and then a treble, including the Australian Cup on Saturday. Will you ride Cascadian in the Queen Elizabeth?
Yes, I will.
Excellent. Are you up there this weekend in Sydney?
Yeah, I've got In Secret Saturday in the TJ, so looking forward to keeping the association going with the Cummings and Godolphin Stable, and she's a great ride. Obviously, it's going to be a great contest, that race, and it'll be good viewing for everybody.
Gee, that's a nice ride, In Secret. You might be able to compare her to another immortal female sprinter after Saturday.
He gave the little black caviar, little clench of the fist after Cascadian, I know. Is that your signature move at Flemington, is it, Benny?
Yeah, look, I'm not big on salutes, to be honest, but when Cascadian won with something in hand, I thought I'd pull one off the mantelpiece. Give it a run.
Well done on the weekend, Ben.
Good on you guys. Thank you.
He's always been the best, or no better than. You'll have your J-Max and Jamie Cars, but you get that impression that he now knows that he's the sins of the past and the injuries of the past and all that sort of stuff. He's mature, he's focused, and he's as good as they get. He could be a really super player in the next 2 years.
It's that that calmness, the patience. So as he spoke through, knew the animal, had belief in what it could do, trusted his plan. It's Well, that's exactly what you want, isn't it?
And you can't punter. You can't ride that horse pretty. You can't, like, there was an interesting social media thing I was telling you about with Brad Davidson. I sent out one saying, well, is there a better rider? And he said, oh, well, that wasn't much of a ride. He should have come out in the three wide train. Well, Mellum just explained why on cascading you can't do that. Yeah. You've got to ride risky.
He's always been one of the best jockeys, but he's been his own worst enemy in years gone by, Ben Mellum. But as he said, he's matured a lot in the last 12 months and now he's getting his opportunity. It was good to get a bit of an insight into how Jamie's going. Good to hear that she's improved a lot over the next couple of
days.
Could
be a long road there, sounds.
I think it'll be 6 months. And as you say, no one can put time frames on these things, and they haven't even discussed it, which you can imagine because her health takes precedence over everything else. Speaking of the jockeys, Blake McDougall, who had that fall again on Friday, he's got a fracture of the C7 T3. No surgery required, which is good, but he's going to be in a hard neck brace for 6 months, the recovery.
And just on the circumstances, that was a collapsing horse.
That was not interference caused. T.O. Nugent's doing well, but he's got a C1 fracture as well. So he's probably 4 to 6 months. Ethan Brown, he's been knocked around a lot, Matty Heinen says. He's still got little to no voice because of, they think, the tubes that were down the throat, but he's been through the ringer, obviously, with a lacerated liver, had his gallbladder removed. So, again, he's, again, in that 3 to 4 to 6 month period as well. And speaking of Ethan Brown, 10:30 today, the hearing will be on the stewards' hearing into that fall with Mark Zara, Damien Oliver, Blake Sheen, all in attendance as well.
And there was a fall at the Hillsville Picnics on Saturday. Grant Seckham, he had a bit of a neck brace thing and he's back home okay. And there was two dead heats up there as well. But glad to hear that. But the falls continued and it happened at the Picnics.
Took more, plenty more to discuss after the 9 o'clock news.
Sends Racing Pulse. This is The Verdict.
Welcome back to The Verdict. Matty Stewart and Mick Sharkey. I'll get to a few SMSs in a moment, but just rounding off the Australian Cup boys, obviously Cascadian, who's now won $8.2 million, three group ones. He's been an underrated horse who's got bucket loads of cash for the poor owners.
$8.2 million.
Exactly,
but
right.
Cascadian. But you know what that speaks of? Wow. Just a sound horse with a good temperament.
Yeah.
How old is he now?
Exactly.
Eight? This is a horse who's been able to earn about $1 million a year for 8 years. That's how he rolls.
2.5 has jumped in his last two starts.
But he's not the best horse, but he's the best horse to have, isn't he?
Well, what do we make of the race overall? Numerian, a return to form. I thought Pounding was outstanding. I know people are going to say, oh, it's a weak Australian Cup. But he's a horse that just continues to improve. And if he does, he could come back and be a Group 1 player in mile races during the Spring Carnival.
Interesting to see what his handicap would be.
Yeah.
Because a race like a Toorak would be a really nice race for him. I think he's a handicapper. I know he's run third in an Australian Cup. I know he's run well in an All-Star Mile. But I think at the end of the day, he's a handicapper. And you could probably say the same for Numerian too.
Yep.
Caulfield Cup Run was great. You know, we made a good case for him on Friday. I thought it was a really bold ride from Jamie Mott to trust the horse's strength and his stamina. He's a funny horse. 2,000 metres, he's almost not quite sharp enough to win over that trip. 2,400 metres, it's almost a bridge too far. It's like that Q22 that he won, that 2,200 metres, that's his sweet spot.
Yeah.
That seems to be his opportunity, so maybe he goes to Queensland.
Nonconformist was really disappointing.
He had a wide run from the barrier, though, didn't he? The one that I want to take out of it, because I don't. It was a weak race, so I don't know why we shouldn't overstate where we think they may go, because it's all relative to. Virtuous Circle just was trucking up on the inside and then just run up bums. I mean, he's the one who might come out of the race a bit, I think.
Yeah, I know people were making a case for Patroness and that she was unlucky. And whatnot. The two that...
And Luna Flair was the other one that didn't
Luna Flair, I don't know where she's going, but I want to be with her wherever she goes next. And he's a shocker. He was second up into that race. He'll go to Sydney and he'll win something, or Queensland and win something. Maybe a Doomben Cup for he's a shocker.
So Cascadian goes into the... What's the Queen Elizabeth market to give a measure of where
I think he's about $12 because you've got... Animo, and you've got
Jubai Honor,
and they look leagues ahead of any. Montefilia is the third favourite. Now, she ran honestly well again on Saturday, but, you know, she's not beating either of those.
Montefilia is for sale in May.
Is it?
Well, English have just announced the chairman's sale catalogue, and there she is, Montefilia.
If you go by time form and Daniel O'Sullivan, Animo won't get near Jubai Honor.
No, that's right. But when we spoke to Daniel O'Sullivan last week, he said that Animo is a horse that just does what he has to do. He's not a horse that's going to put six on a field. So that can sometimes mean your ratings and your times are not exactly black and white.
Or they're only as good as their margin. Well, I mean, that's the thing, too. I mean, I think it's a bit of a myth that some horses just do what they have to.
Well, what about Northerly?
Yeah, some of them do, I guess, like him. But I mean, Jubai Honor was the old Max Presnell line. A great horse is a horse who puts a big margin on another great horse. And Jubai Honor is a margin job, isn't he?
Just overall, we might as well talk about this group of horses now. The 2,000-metre Australian Cup and the 2,400-metre Tancred. I mean, I know we had two Melbourne Cup winners in the Tancred, but that was just a stayers race, looks like getting ready for a Sydney Cup, really. Arapahoe wins the Group 1. Good on him. Well done. Connections. And it was great to see Bjorn Baker basically hitting everyone within sight.
Oh, my God. Didn't he give that bloke a whack in kidneys there?
I love it. Whoa. That's what you want to see. Trainers enjoying themselves. Rachel King, another Group 1. I think she's the first female to win a Tancred Stakes. But when you think of some of the old Tancreds back in the day and you look at that field on Saturday, it was a bunch of middle distance horses preparing for a Sydney Cup almost.
Well, yeah, it was a lead up. Yeah, it was a lead up to a Sydney Cup, of course. I think the Sydney Cup winner, Cleveland, he was.
He ran really well.
I think he'll be the horse that wins that race.
Vaughan Declare ran well.
What?
From race? A Sydney Cup point of view?
Vaughan Declare ran well. King Frankel ran really well. Interesting race because we all expected a wet track, Manny, didn't we? And the rain didn't come.
Didn't come.
And all of a sudden, Gold Trip, Knight's Order, fans, these sort of, you know, the horses that wanted a wet track and wanted that slog, they were still relatively
He was all right, Gold Trip.
Gold Trip was good.
If you get a wet track in the Sydney Cup, he's right in.
He got pushed back a pair further back than Zara would have liked. But
I can't see him beating Cleveland at the weights.
You can't make the collective group of horses better.
No, that's
they
what I'm
are,
saying.
They just are what they are.
We have an above average, but not superstar group of middle distance to stayers. And
above average?
Well,
what's your definition of average? Your average is a very low bar then.
Well, hang on. An average horse.
No, we're talking about these are weight for rage staying horses running for millions of dollars. Well, they're not. Anyway.
No, but I'm saying that. Well, okay, maybe not above average.
You're mayoing it.
Maybe not above average. But I mean, Val, you've got a couple of Melbourne Cup winners there, but they're not at their best now. Vaughan Declare. He's 2 years after, 3 years after he's won a Melbourne Cup. We've never had that depth, though, have we?
Well, we kind of have, though.
Well,
that's
we have,
the thing.
But not
How
recent.
Long ago?
Probably
yeah,
not
well,
last
we did, but
years.
That was the era of the great geldings, and maybe Moody said this once or twice about maybe the reason why the geldings don't dominate like they used to with treatments and so on. There's
Hong Kong, studs,
yeah,
Sharky. Well, what's your viewpoint on it?
But the horses that are retiring to stud early are mostly those scampery little Newgate horses. So.
Well, we've been educated and taught, the market has been, that two-year-old early returns is what you want as an owner. So breeders have moved with the market, and that's what they are tending to breed.
But isn't there a nice counterbalance with the re-emergence of the New Zealand horse?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
This is the nice story now, is the Legado Levante Imperatriz, even though she's a sprinter. Goldman by... Tell us about this Zed replacement.
Yeah, well, and I guess recently the conversation's been around a horse like Parcier and Satano Aladdin and these sort of horses that are emerging. But Verdi, the sire of Maddie's Melbourne Cup winner, the invincible
Goldman.
Verdi... unheralded is to say the least. So he only had 8 starts, no black type victory, actually no black type placings.
Where's
to
he
his
stand?
Name. Well, he stands somewhere in New Zealand. I haven't got to the bottom of that yet, but he is a half brother to Pacini, who won a New Zealand Derby.
Who was the sire of one good horse in the last couple of years? Yeah. It might have been an OTI horse.
Yeah, I think you're right. And the old, we were just saying in the break, Myler from New Zealand, Sir Slick, that came over for a couple of Doomben Cups. Look, it's a solid family.
Old school tough.
Old school tough. I think that's what Goldman is. Verdi has only covered 26 mares in that first season, which has produced Goldman. 13 of them have names. Goldman is one of two winners, and the other one has won a low-grade maiden somewhere in New Zealand from 15 starts. Last year, poor old Verdi covered one mare.
Are you serious?
It's so much as one. Of course, he's been horrible.
He's
generally.
He's a bit of a Z, not a total Z. But you know what it proves to me? That the best horses that we produce in this part of the world are always flukes. If we try to breed champion to champion, it doesn't work here. The best horses here are always accidents. Name a champion that we've had that was bred to be a champion.
Ooh. Kingston Rule was pretty well bred. Maybe he wasn't a champion.
Think of Sunline, think of Northerly, think of every single McCarthy absolute Diva. Winks. But she was by Desert King. You know, like, for some reason, the greats of Australasian racing have always been
inadvertent. Are you calling him a great now? You've declared him a Melbourne Cup. There is a touch of freakishness about him, isn't
he's
it?
He's a great talent.
He's had three starts in Australia and won a benchmark 64, a 78, and now the listed Roy Higgins, and he's won them all by a space.
I think Mellum's comments lengths. Ring true about it. Geordie could not pull him up.
Well, you can see why he's favourite shark for the Melbourne Cup off a performance like that.
No, I can't.
Why not?
No, you've got this one wrong. But say the market was changed and he was the 30th. No, but say the market's wrong, but he's still entitled to be favourite in whatever the market is. Say he should be $34 favourite.
What European?
There has to be a favourite.
Mate, hardly any.
So who would you have favourite?
Well, there has to be a favourite, only because we bet on this race from 12 months.
You're underrating him. You're underrating him.
I like the horse, Matty.
He should be favourite.
Australian markets.
No, but you're confusing the issue. We're not talking about how stupid the markets are. I'm just saying that whatever the market is, he should be pre-post favourite. Whatever the market is, whether the favourite's $34, which it should be, he should be at that mark ahead of everything else.
I like the horse. I think the horse has got a lot of potential, and I'm excited to see where he can go. But I don't know if beating an out-of-form Slocum, Swords Drawn, who would be around the mark in a Warrnambool Cup, and Allegron by between 2.25 and 4 lengths is the, in bright lights, headline act.
If the
Melbourne
race had
Cup
gone another 200 metres, he wins by 8. If it goes by another 300 metres, he wins by 10.
I don't know about that. Don't know about that.
Well, Gaywater has
nice horse for sure.
What a stable.
$11
and season. Gaywater
interesting
has
to see what happens with White Marlin.
Well, that's the other one.
Yeah. Well, White Marlin. If White Marlin goes and wins the Andrew Ramsden, he'll be $11 favourite suddenly.
Like, he want to win it
insert
well.
Insert horse's name here, and you are the favourite. If you
you got him. You got this one wrong.
Let's have a listen. Gaywater House was on with Half early this morning, and it's a great opportunity for Jordan Childs, who's taken it. Literally by the reins, and he rode an outstanding race. And this is what Gay had to say about putting Jordan Childs on and how she finds these younger jockeys and develops them.
He's outstanding, as simple as that. And the mate took a little while to get into his head, and then all of a sudden I said to him one day a few weeks back, I said, "You thought I was a silly old fool, didn't you?" And he gave me a wry smile, and I thought, yes, I knew that. And I said, if you just are like a sponge, I'll train you and teach you. Biggest thing is to get the clock in their head, to be able to go that little bit faster. And it doesn't mean you have to lead. It doesn't, but it means it gets you into a tempo that can be very advantageous. And you look at people like Adam Hieronymus, who, you know, was riding provincials and all of a sudden riding Group 1s. And I know he's just broken his collarbone, so he's not back. You look at Nash, who came up, had never ridden a Group 1 horse till he came to my stable. You look at Blake Shin, one of the most thinking jockeys we have around and always so meted in everything he does, came to me as a sort of bad boy of Victoria, you know, bad boy of Melbourne. Blake's changed his life and a joy to work with. You know, it's great fun working with the young boys. It really is. And I can... They're more accepting of my ideas, the younger person. You know, the more mature jockey's already got made up their mind about me, you know, or about the way. So it's hard to sort of work as a team.
I thought it was fascinating how she gets these jockeys to believe in themselves. It's all about the tempo, the timing, and that maybe some of the more experienced older jockeys think that, no, we're not going to do it that way. Gay maybe doesn't know best. So she brings these younger jockeys through for the ride, and look at what Geordie, he's now Sharky on the Melbourne Cup favourite.
I love the fact that, you know, Gay is so strong in her belief around how horses should be trained, how they should present to the races, how they should be ridden in races. I love that she takes these younger jockeys on, and as she says, she teaches them about what she wants.
She drills the message,
and
doesn't
if
she?
They are happy to play, if they want to toe the line and listen and do what they're told, they get opportunities. It is very much like, you know, the experienced tradesperson, the apprentice comes along. If they listen and they learn and they're willing to do that, they too can become a really good tradesperson. If they don't, they don't last very long, Matty.
Exactly.
And they're often they're off to fend for themselves. Okay, Smarty,
you want to come in with your own ideas? Yeah. Well, you're not welcome here.
You think you know better, you go over there for a bit. But it's the passing on of knowledge is what I like in that story.
I know there's so much water to flow under the bridge, but right here and now, the biggest story of the weekend, other than the New Zealand horses and this Tassie blow-up, was where Gay Waterhouse sits right now. You know, like, she's got the Melbourne Cup. This is back to, you know, this is Gay back on centre stage, you know. Like, and she's been on centre stage in Melbourne the last few weeks, which I think's interesting because she's obviously Mrs. Sydney, but she's also very traditional. She, even though the All-Star is not traditional as such, but she was here for the All-Star Mile, for Alligator Blood. She was here at Flemington on the weekend. She wasn't at Rose Hill.
Well, White Marlin, I think, is going to be racing this weekend, and then maybe heading to Mornington, I think she said this morning, for maybe the Mornington Cup, and then we'll be at Flemington in a couple of weeks for the Andrew Ramsden. And if you've just missed it before, just to wrap up the Roy Higgins, this is what Matty has declared will be happening.
A golden ticket up for grabs in the Melbourne Cup around the bend. 500 to go. Goldman in front, travelling well, hands and heels, two lengths. Youth Spirit, Midnight Blue, Swords drawn to the middle. Then Young Verta, Solcombe down the centre of the track, still has six to pick up, and then Allegron. So the front runner, Goldman, 250 metres to go. Now called upon, still clear by three lengths to Swords drawn. Solcombe and Youth Spirit, Goldman at the 150, two and a half lengths, Swords drawn, Solcombe, but it's Goldman going great guns for Geordie Childs, an up-and-coming stayer. Goldman won it brilliantly. Solcombe in second, third in the race.
If it doesn't step on a rusty nail, Goldman will win the Melbourne Cup.
Oh, there's going to be a lot of
what
rusty...
What if it does step on a rusty nail? Someone's going to say, you mozzed him.
We're going to take a quick break on the verdict. We'll be back with the other races at Flemington. We're going to catch up also with Michael Kent Jr. after What You Need.
And at the clock tower, What You Need, Gibbity's head goes up to Renosu Benedetta, then Rich Fortune, but it's What You Need. What You Need comes clear. Nice winner. What You Need from Renosu Benedetta. She dances just...
He's a very nice winner. He's three from three now, taking out the listed Sunlight Classic. A great inaugural edition of the Sunlight Classic, $500,000. It was a very smart field, and I think we'll have a few horses to follow out of it, none more so than What You Need, trained by Mick Price, Michael Kent Jr. And Jr. joins us. Morning, Michael. How are you?
Morning, gents. I'm very well. Yourself?
Very well indeed. I think he lived up to the hype on Saturday. Is there more still to come?
You've got to think so. I mean, his third start, he's a big baby. So, I would think there's more to come for sure.
New string to the bow in a regard, Michael, by being able to settle off the speed and finish off at a rate of knots. What do you think is going to be his best pattern in the future?
Oh, I think he's one of these, you know, you love to train these types because you can put him anywhere in a race, got the most beautiful nature, and he's very tractable. So the instructions were to Ben yesterday, keep it very simple. You got the best last 400 sprint, so just wherever you're happy to be. And he's smooth. He was facing the breeze. I think he'd have been more dynamic with cover, but he just stepped out of trouble and actually didn't go all that hard early. And just his superior turn of foot got him over the line pretty comfortably in the end. I think Ben gave him one little reminder, and otherwise he was pretty soft.
Elation sort of honed his skills in Adelaide this time last year. Is that where this guy's heading?
No idea. We just brought him up nice and progressively and slowly, having had a long break. he's had three jump outs. He was due to run Saturday but drew a terrible barrier. So he'll run this Saturday at Bendigo. Bo Mertens gets the call up with most of the top jockeys either interstate or on the sidelines. So that'll be a good opportunity for Bo. Horse is going super. And look, he's rated 82. So look, we thought back in the spring that he might get to the top level. We'll just assess him on race day. It's always the ultimate test and hope that he comes through and we can build from there.
And next start for what you need, is he headed to Sydney and then maybe a Goodwood?
Yeah, he's definitely off to Sydney. So 2 weeks between runs for the Arrowfield. I think Arf Cabin's his main competitor there. Mm. Obviously very smart sprinting colt. And trialled particularly well last week. And then, yeah, for us to go well, well, the obvious Group 1 sprint to target would be the Goodwood, which would give us time to sort of get him back from Sydney, a little freshen up in a trial and over to Adelaide. But I think the Arrowfield, he carried a lot of weight for prospective stud colts, you know. It's been won by some seriously good horses recently. Marzu beat in the Congo and Paul Ailey last year, for example. So, you know, being on day two of the championships and worth $1 million whilst the Group 2, I think it's got a lot of weight in terms of stud value.
The phone been ringing on that point for a horse like What You Need, or is it a bit early at this point?
So,
yeah, no, I haven't had a phone call. But anyway, yeah, Witten's in the horse, so yeah, I'm not sure what happens there. But anyway, he's the right sort of colt. He's got the most beautiful physique as well, electrically fast, and hopefully we can get him to the top level.
Hey, Mick, I just wanted to get your perspective, and it'll take us into I'm Thunderstruck, an update there as well. We've been... Well, I have anyway, raving about Goldman all day, and and a little bit later on today, we're going to have a chat to David Ellis about this amazing resurrection of the New Zealand horse, and you guys have tapped into that market really well in recent years, Tarzino and so on, and I'm Thunderstruck. How, and you've also dabbled in other parts of the world, is New Zealand now back in town as the go-to for stables like yours to find some really nice horses? They seem to be on the crest of a wave again.
Yeah, they've always they're always so competitive. I mean, it's quite incredible, really. I think they have a foal crop every year of 3,000 only, and most of the mares over there are old. You know, there's not a lot of operations over there buying fresh blood to bring across, like not going to sales and buying the expensive brood mares like they have in the Hunter Valley. So they really overachieve and punch above their weight. It's quite incredible. I often think if you had the bloodstock in Hunter Valley in Cambridge, what result you'd get, because they must just have beautiful ground. And
is that what it is? Like, what is the reason then? If they're not replenishing with young, flash, sexy broodmares and so on, has it got to do with the pasture and the nurturing and all those little one percenters that we don't think about much?
It's got to be. Yeah, they've had recent volcanoes, obviously, and they've got beautiful, rich, you know, mineral-rich ground. And, yeah, whilst they haven't got the flashy pedigrees, they've got some beautiful bloodlines. You know, even look at Goldman. I think he's got Isabel, his dam sire. So they've got beautiful bloodlines, and yeah, I mean they rear them, they give them time, and I think particularly, well, it's actually interesting at the moment they're getting some sprinters to come over here and compete against our best sprinters. Typically, anything a mile plus, they're really competitive. So
are they stronger or are we weak at the moment, or is there a bit of both?
I'd say a bit of both, yeah. Look at Sydney on the weekend in those races, like the Tancred, the Neville Selwood, like 90% of the runs were all from all imports, weren't they? So, yeah, and that's the way we breed our horses. We breed to that market of precocity and speed, and that's what the market demands. So we go shopping for the quick fix, buying tried horses overseas.
That quick fix, so you've had experience with horses from Europe, from America, albeit the American horses you've bought out of yearling sales, and New Zealand. Where do you prefer to shop?
Anywhere you can find a nice horse. I'm a believer that a good horse is a good horse anywhere. I'd love to buy them from Japan if you could.
and we're going to ask you about the one that you would have. You don't miss a good horse. We'll ask you about Equinox as well.
Jesus, what a horse. He was 22.3 years down. He's a superstar. But I was talking to Aussie Kerr about this recently, and he said they're so hard to buy from, and he thinks that if they've had more than five starts over there, very hard to get them to go to our way of racing, you know. So it's interesting. I think New Zealand's very good because they're buyable, and they're just across, 3 hours away. Europe's fantastic, obviously, but for all the for everyone that works, probably 8 or 9 that don't work out, and we do spend a lot of money over there, very expensive to get across. America is difficult because typically they're dirt racing orientated. Doesn't really make sense here. So for me, definitely Europe and New Zealand are the two main ones.
Just on, I was talking to Terry Henderson the other day. They've got Little Thunder, even Littler Thunder. So they've got the whole group of siblings to I'm Thunderstruck. What was the washer? I know he had the wobbles after the race and so on. Is it plough on with I'm Thunderstruck? What do you do now?
No, it's wait and see. I think tomorrow morning, Matthew Chadwick will gallop him here on the grass, and that will determine what we do with him. It's up in the air at the moment. He had heat stress, much like a marathon runner crossing the line. They're a little bit staggery and uncoordinated. He was like that. He regained his composure probably half an hour after and seemed to be fine. His blood was perfect during the week. He's beautiful and sound. He always has been. But you just wonder how much that takes out of your horse, and you're not going into an easy race. You're going up against Panamo and Dubai Honor, and it's going to be a very good race. So we want him to be 100% right. He had a big spring, 6 runs, race every fortnight with a short turnaround. So if we had to sell him, that would be fine by us. And he'd have a nice break now, 2 months out, and then get ready for the spring again. So, horse comes first, and we'll know tomorrow morning probably which way we're going.
Is a minimal going to the Derby?
No. Paddock. For a talented horse, he's very immature. He's still quite light and leggy and narrow. So we thought to give him 2 months out, that'd be good, and to fend off some Hong Kong offers. They've all decided to keep him, which is great. And, he might be a two-rack Golden Eagle horse. Who knows?
Hey, Junior, say you're in the neutral corner. Say it's a good 4 next week. Are you at Camp Animo or Camp Dubai Honor?
Yes, I worked for William Haggis for over a year and loved the team there, and that was a monster effort. I would be in Animo's corner, though. I'd love to, put one up them, I suppose, and go to Royal Ascot and win again. But I do think that, those Europeans can do a really good first-up run off the plane, and then whether they can, do that again, we'll see. But I'd be in Animo's corner.
Hey, speaking of those Europeans, you would have been rapt with the performance of A Case of You in the William Reid.
Yeah, he was fantastic. He was in an awful spot in the corner, last in the corner. He was held up, according to the steward's report, from the 400 to the 150, so it's fairly significant loss of momentum and still rushed home. So that was very good. We'll head to Doomben 10,000 and the Kingsford Smith Cup, which would be nice races. Maybe a quokka, but it's a bit of a journey to get over there and back. Those are the two obvious ones up in Queensland.
Just quickly, too, I know you've got some entries in for Sandown on Wednesday, and two of them are pretty exciting horses, Loco and Globe. Are they likely to head there?
Loco does. Mark Zara's on him, and as soon as Ethan was out, had about 10 jockeys trying to jump on him. But Zara got the call up, and yeah, he's a very exciting horse. He probably bounced from there 10 days later into a mile at Sandown again, and then on an Adelaide Derby pass. And Globe will just return, just keep him in lower company and go to Pakenham again Thursday night in a mile 64, and he should be hard to beat.
Good on you, Mick. Great job on the weekend. Look forward to seeing a couple of nice ones step out throughout the week as well.
No worries. Thanks, guys.
He's got some horses, don't he?
Haven't they? What? Some nice ones, but
try some different things too. Like a couple of those American yearlings that Michael's gone and bought, that's been a bit of his project. They've shown something without setting the world on fire, but it's interesting. Matty, they've had imports from all over the world. I just wonder, by the sounds of it, the Kiwis are the tougher ones, the more reliable ones. And when it comes to spending money and the economics of this, these ventures, bringing horses out from parts far flung, I think reliability is a big factor in the transaction.
Is the European romance nearly over? Because for every 9 he gets, 9 don't measure up. That's a 50% ratio. And
it's the injury factor as well.
The lightly delicate little feet that they've got. And the more intense scrutiny of them here when they get here. And they see you coming, the old saying. And maybe we're going back to 1975 again. Who knows?
Maybe.
That was one of your best years.
It was. It was. I peaked in 75.
A few SMSs coming through here. Asked Mick about Case of You. Yep, we did that. Hey, where's this one here? Jeff, Goldman could be the mortgage eliminator, Matty. That's one that's maybe in the same corner as you. This is a good one. Is Celine Gaudray the next JK? What a jockey she's becoming. Can't wait for them to go head-to-head on big races. It was a really good ride on Sparkle on Saturday, wasn't it?
She's happy with my dubbed her on the big V last week, the Celine Machine. Celine Gaudray.
Celine Machine.
Graham, who works down at Mix, who's, you know, there's always one at every stable who's got is knowledgeable. A couple of years ago, he said, don't you worry about Alana and all these other girls. He said, Celine Gaudry's the number one, and she's... I'm not saying she's better than Alana Kelly and the others, but she may well be the next in line. She's a total star, Celine.
A few SMSs coming through here saying Geordie Childs wouldn't be able to ride Goldman in a cup, wouldn't be able to make its weight. So what could Geordie Childs ride at?
Don't know. Did he have to get down to ride Surprise Baby that one year?
Yeah, I think he did.
Well, it's not going to get more than... It'll almost be a 50-kilo job, Goldman. It's won the ticket in, so how much more will they... expose maybe Caulfield Cup on the way through.
What was the minimum last year?
53.5 he had on Surprise Baby, or Surprise Baby had when he rode him.
But sometimes Melbourne Cup minimums are surprisingly high, aren't they?
They can be.
Yeah.
It's only won one listed race, this horse. You can't weight it too high.
But it's all it's all got to be relative to... Yeah, anyway, we don't... Well, that's water under the bridge. There's other jockeys. Sorry, Geordie. There are other jockeys if you can't ride him.
El Patronus was one of the sickest beats of the weekend. Well, it was unlucky. I don't know whether it would have won.
It did get beaten fair way.
SMS here. How good a horse is Prowess? I'll get you to hold your thoughts on that. We'll take a quick break. I want to talk about Prowess and following on from the Kiwi line that you're talking about, Matty. Is it the opposition's not... that good, or is she just outstanding?
Placing their opinion on the line, it's The Verdict.
It's Pavetra getting the upper hand from Soul Choice, but here comes the Kiwi filly. Prowess is coming home hard, and Prowess moved up now, takes the lead in the Vinery Stud Stakes, and she's a class act, pulling right away, Prowess, to win it by 3.5-2, Pavetra. Third, anyone's guess. Byron Bell, Perossilbite out, Fireburn the inside.
I'm going to do it, Chris.
Well, it's all right.
I thought it for a long time. She could be the best I've trained. She is a superstar, this filly. She is bloody good. I've travelled a lot of horses to Australia, and not many settled in like she did, and it's the first trip away, so she's only going to get better. She is a star in the making.
The Oaks?
No. She goes home in the morning. The world's her oyster.
Yeah, the world is her oyster. That was Roger James doing, as he now calls her, Chris Waller. I like how it's now called doing a Chris Waller if you're crying in the post-race. 7 from 9, 2/3 placings, Prowess, and she wins by 3.5, could have won by 5, easy, Sharky. Now, are you a non-believer here, or are you... in the same camp as Roger James? He says the best horse he's ever trained, 40 years of training experience, Silent Achiever, Zonda back in the day. It's a pretty big rap.
She was the greatest bet in Australia on the weekend. 250 against that lot was like picking it up in the street, fair dinkum. She was a league better than that mob. How good she might be, I don't know. There's still a few rough edges, I think, to knock off with her, and that's saying something given she's won 7 of 9. Yeah, interested in seeing what she can do in the spring if she comes back over here and aims up at some better races. Wonder if he'd set this filly for a race like the Cox Plate, Matty, or whether he'd just pull back a little bit towards an Empire Rose and go that route.
Oh, it's a, you know, now you've got the, she's going to be a four-year-old, isn't she, in the spring? So then you've got this interfering Golden Eagle that becomes an option as well. But
yeah,
historically, you'd say Grand New Zealand Filly, you know, Grand Archway type thing. Is she going to, she'd go onto a Cox Plate? She's by Pricier, Gay Train Pricier, didn't she?
Correct.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, it's great for Roger. Roger's such a great, he's so, you know, one percenters and stuff. He's such a finicky trainer, Roger James. He's always trying to do everything he possibly can. For some reason, whether it's the horses he receives, he's always going to be remembered as a great trainer of fillies, Roger James. He's had good colts and that, of course, but it's been the fillies that he's really been able to get the nuance working with. And you'd love to think, if it wasn't for the era of pop-ups, that you're now looking at one of the top three or four favourites for the Cox Plate.
She's $15, yeah. Well, there's no Animo, so for mine, I know there's money in the Golden Eagle, but the Kiwis love a Cox Plate too. I'd be heading towards a Cox Plate. Rod from Strathmore, Prowess v Legato in the spring. Which camp would you be in?
Depends what distance.
I'd take them both.
I'd be interested.
I'll take a Kiwi package. Just give me a Kiwi package.
I think Legato would have her at a mile, but beyond that, the other filly's stamina reserves might be a bit strong.
And you know who's going really well again over there, who I'm waiting to land and do something, is La Creek. La Creek was the one who came over in the spring, and it didn't work out on that particular occasion at Flemington, but if the pattern continues, then La Creek will come out and win something as well.
Well, La Creek ran third behind Prowess,
yep,
and Campionessa,
yep,
who ran well in the Australian Cup on, yep, Saturday at her last start.
She's probably the only one who hasn't quite carried the flag is Campionessa, because she was only...
she was okay,
yeah,
the other day.
Yeah. I thought she would probably win the Australian Cup given everything else that's been going on.
Well, I think Prowess probably would have won an Australian Cup if it was down here, the way that performance was on Saturday.
Oh, don't know about that.
You don't think it would have beaten Cascadian?
Not on your life.
Really? Okay.
Well, where would you have Pavitra in an Australian Cup?
Pavitra, I would have probably, the way the race was run on Saturday, Pavitra probably would have been top five.
Mm.
Don't you think?
I think she would have struggled to run top 10.
Top 10?
It was a pretty ordinary binary, let's face it. There were some ordinary horses in that race.
Anything else out of Flemington, Sharky, that caught your eye? I thought it was great to see Cindy Alderson top and tail the meeting.
Oh,
I like that Stormbolt.
We spoke about that, didn't we?
Yes.
You know, Stormbolt going through the grades. Just a shame Jigsaw couldn't get the job done and complete the Alderson treble. Did you take the Alderson treble?
No, I didn't.
I thought that would have been a Matt Stewart bet fairy tale sort of
No, it all situation. Unraveled on the night in the in the William Reid. But that Verenskova...
yes.
Is a giant, and she's been a real amazing effort from Cindy Alderson to just keep again. She, like a lot of horses, she hasn't been the perfect horse to train. She's had her niggles. That was a win on pure character for Verenskova. She won on courage alone, because she's had a lot of, you know, she hasn't had a smooth passage
at
all.
Could she find her way to a Sangster?
It'd be nice if it was run up the straight at Flemington.
Yeah, I know, that's the query. But I could see her running well in the little series towards that race. Kalos might be a good wood horse. Up in weight, at the handicap on the lead, was probably entitled to have him. But he's clearly gone ahead from that first up run, and the bopper with that good form running second. I thought that was nice and solid. Yeah, not a lot else jumped off the page at me.
What level can Sparkle get to?
There'd be a listed race there somewhere for her. This is the thing, from 2,000 metres and up, there is not a massive gap between a benchmark 80 horse that can put a few together and a stakes race. And we saw that with Goldman. We've seen that with So Unusual in recent weeks. They can get going and go through those grades really quickly. And maybe there's a listed race somewhere for Sparkle, potentially in Adelaide.
Tony McAvoy gave us a good push, I think it was Friday, Bossy Nick, and it ran quite well in the Breeders. This the second rung, I should say, of two-year-olds, or could we get some progressive types come out of the Breeders on Saturday?
Oh, look, I think that race was little on the flat side. Nothing really sort of grabbed me out of that apart from the winner. I thought it was a nice enough run. He can go and find a similar race at listed Group 3 level, maybe something back in Adelaide.
SMS asking you, Sharky, because it's your favourite topic. Mm-hmm. Sulcombe was the Melbourne Cup favourite after the Queen Elizabeth. What did you make of his run on Saturday re-spring?
I think he went better in the spring.
Yep.
I think he was okay only on Saturday. Again, look at what else, apart from the top two, which I think everybody isolated Goldman and Sulcombe, and you're hoping that Sulcombe would kick into gear once he got beyond that 2,400-metre range, which he did to a degree, but he wasn't the same horse as we saw win the Queen Elizabeth. Swords Drawn, Allegron, Youth Spirit, these are the horses that were behind Goldman and Sulcombe.
Oh, you're potting Goldman again. I've tuned out for a while.
It's going to be a different story.
Crick is in the paddock, by the way. I've just been informed by my spy down on the peninsula, a.k.a. the Thoroughbred.
This is an interesting SMS which has come through. Morning, boys. Casting aside fatigue and overworking issues, should penalties, suspensions be doubled for Group 1 races similar to footy grand finals? Would it make a difference? That's from our mate Joshy from Horsham.
Why not?
And we get double demerit points when you're driving cars during Christmas periods and other periods.
Do you really?
You do.
Oh, God.
I obey the
rules. I'm glad I now know that. Yeah, I've got no issue with that. If it's all about life and death and something that may work, bang.
Because I wonder whether the penalties are big enough in major races. We know with the whip breaches, you lose pretty much your entire percentage if you do get rubbed out for that. But Opie, Bossom and Nashra Willer, 11 meetings, 12 meetings on Friday night, which essentially means they might miss one feature Saturday race or one Saturday race meeting. And a midweek meeting, it doesn't seem that much, Sharky.
It doesn't. No, I think there's got to be a little bit tighter, a bit more strict, I think, on indiscretions.
Gee, I'm getting the runaround trying to organise a follow-up to that important Tasmanian story. I'm getting handballed around. That's not an unfamiliar thing.
See, normally most people would do production and preparation off air, but you're just here doing it. I'm wondering why no one's really answering me. We might take a break and come back and try and get people engaged in this program. We're going to have a chat to Troy Corstens after the astrologist. Overseas performance in the Outcourse Sprint.
There's still wide open here. Al Suhail, Happy Romance, the astrologist from Australia. Duke Y on the outside. They're coming down toward the final 16th. It's Al Suhail with a slight lead. Duke Y on the outside. The astrologist flashing home outside of them. They're coming down to the finish, and it is going to be a photo finish. And it was very close on the wire. I think Danya ended up getting there in the last strides to win the Outcourse Sprint.
Oh, he was brave, wasn't he? But he just got beaten by a lip in the Outcourse Sprint in Dubai and Dubai World Cup night. We'll talk more about the feature races after 10 o'clock. But it could be the start of a long overseas odyssey for the astrologist because they've got designs on Royal Ascot now. And Troy Corstens, the trainer, joins us. And Troy, sadly, didn't actually make it to Dubai. Talk about unlucky and having bad things happen. Troy had another bad accident in the lead up. He broke his leg skiing. Oh, how are you, Lord. Troy?
Oh, can you believe it? Like one of the biggest moments of my life in horse racing, and I'm bloody sitting in a hospital bed in Cabrini Hospital in Melbourne.
Did you do something bad in a previous life?
I'm not sure, Matty. I tell you, I'm so disappointed with myself. We actually booked a ski trip 3 years ago and paid for it up front and everything like that, myself and two mates. And COVID hit and we didn't get to go. And they said, listen, if you don't go this year, you're going to lose your money. So I thought, perfect time. I'll pop over there for a few days and then head off to Dubai straight after that. It ties in quite nicely. And on the second last day skiing, I was coming down a stupid little green run and caught an edge and flipped my knee out and completely shattered my tibia.
Oh, my Lord.
And I could tell you, Japanese hospitals are not much fun.
Oh, dearie me.
Some people, when it comes to physical activity, Troy, a little bit accident prone. And
yeah.
An uncle of mine sort of said to me one day, you know, the day you get a serious injury is the day you give it away. You're pondering?
You know what I'm thinking, Troy? You've had, I can't imagine a worse last couple of years. The only way is up.
Oh.
Yeah, that's what I recommend. You got to, you just got to get back on and keep going, don't you? All right. You can't give up now.
Skydiving next.
Oh, no, please don't do that.
Maybe abseiling or something like that. So Lauren wants me to take up chess.
Oh, I bet. Yeah. So did you have an operation in Japan or did you come back to Australia to have the operation?
It was very funny. The Japanese doctor took the x-ray of the knee and he said, basically the translator, he talked for about 4 minutes and then the translator said, get back to Australia as quick as you can and have it operated on.
How did you deal with the pain management and the flight?
I was that disappointed with myself. I kind of saw it as punishment for myself. So I just took it on board and put my head down and got home.
So were you in Cabrini with the TV hanging off the wall, the one you got to pay for? I've fallen into that trap before. So did you watch the astrologist from your... Where were you when the astrologist ran around?
In the hospital on my own and watching it quietly, I can tell you it was just such a fantastic effort. I was ecstatic, but sitting here enjoying it on my own.
He's an amazing horse, Troy. He's just so tough. He's been right around the mark in great Group 1 sprint races locally, but for him to then head over there, quick turnaround on his last run in Australia to that Owl course, it's a massive performance. Just speaks to his absolute toughness, doesn't it?
Yeah, and you think about it, like Sharky ran in the Newmarket.
Yeah.
3 days later, he jumped on a plane for 15 hours, went to a different jurisdiction that's, 30 degrees hotter on the other side of the thing, had to deal with the jet lag and fronts up against those sorts of horses and has the guts to run second in a field like that. So I think it says more, you know, right along, I've always said that, honestly, he's a really good Group 3 horse, but he tries so hard. You just got to give him a crack at everything that you can, because one day he's going to pop one of these off. You know, he's not got the greatest ability in the world, but he tries so hard and he just gives his all every time he goes around.
Royal Ascot is obviously it's in a straight line, which suits him. But as you say, he's a Group 2, Group 3 horse going to. Where Nature Strip dared to tread most recently. What's the feeling about jumping into a Royal Ascot?
Look, we were nearly there anyway, Matty, and to come home we had to do 4 weeks quarantine and basically would have put the rest of the autumn and winter period out, and we would have had to think about spring again. So we just figured we'll go over there. There's a good lead-up race for him in the middle of May, the Duke of York, which is a 1,200-metre straight race for him, a Group 2 race. You look at the Golden Jubilee, the King's Stand, obviously, they'll be a bit sharp for him, you'd think. And then you can look at the July and possibly the Prix de Ligiste in France that Artorias ran in. The 1,300 might be suitable for him as well. So if he could run in three of those, I mean, it's going to be worthwhile. And, you know, whatever you put him in, he's going to try his guts out.
So will you set up a satellite European operation or will he go to a caretaker trainer over in the UK?
So we're very lucky at the moment. He's still in Dubai with Dom's about to come home, and then we'll sit down this week and work out exactly what we're going to do. But he'll stay in Dubai for another week or so, taking it easy, and then he'll go over to Marco Body. Nathan Bennett has a good relationship with Marco and Lucy over there, so... he'll go straight to their place and then we'll work out who we're going to send over and have them based over there for the next couple of months.
Wow. You're too busy to do that, or it'd be nice to have a European summer?
I think I'd better stay here for a little while, but I'm actually not sure who we're going to send. Maybe Raquel has been overriding him in Dubai, yeah. She's more than competent, and look, there's no doubt that he's a pretty easy horse to do anything with, to be honest, Michael, so I don't think we're going to struggle to get someone to go over there with him, that's for sure.
Are you back home, or are you still in hospital?
No, I actually get operated on at 5 o'clock this afternoon, and then I'm home tomorrow night.
Troy, stop doing things. That seems to be the issue at the moment.
You just told him to get back on the bike.
No, I think he needs to wrap himself in cotton wool. I've changed my mind. I think doing things is not good at the moment. So
It was much easier when I was fat and overweight. And
yeah, stop being so slim and active. It's not good for your health.
I might take up swimming, Maddie, like you.
Yeah, righto. You might run into an oversized banjo shark or something.
Not many sharks. There's not many sharks in the bay, but if you get in there...
Oh, all right, I'll take you down to the jetty. All right, I'll gently take you down to the jetty. We'll work on it.
We might just have to wait a few weeks until this comes right.
Righto, we'll do that.
Hey, Troy, well done on the performance of the astrologist. And get someone to buy a TATS ticket. The luck's got to change. We wish you all the best with your operation this afternoon, mate.
It'll change. We could be a lot worse, mate. I can't complain. I've got a good horse and a good team around me, so I'm okay.
Good on you, mate. Troy Corson's joining us there, live from his hospital bed at Cabrini.
Broken after that leg shocking... skiing. I've never liked skiing.
I hate skiing.
Skiing's no good.
Your hands get all wet despite the gloves, the boots never fit, and you can do a Troy.
It seems to me the most enjoyable part of ski trips hot chocolates and gather, the chalet. The chalet and drinking mulled wine.
Après
and
skiing.
Not skiing.
I suppose the problem is if you buy a Range Rover, you're therefore committed to going skiing. So it's a problem with actually buying a Range Rover, then you've got no option. You have to go up the mountain.
Well, there'll be a lot by the way Melbourne went on the weekend. It's going to be a busy ski season. Oh, Matt Nevitt's not happy about that. We'll take a break. More to come after this.
On RSN's Racing Pulse, this is The Verdict.
Here comes Usman Tesoro with a rush on the far outside. Algiers to catch. Usman Tesoro gains in. Goes by. Usman Tesoro hits the front. Usman Tesoro wins the Dubai World Cup for Japan. But Equinox is still going strong, and he's lengthening his lead down to the 16th pole. Here is the titan of the world's turf. He is Equinox. He scores for Japan by four lengths on the wire.
Two phenomenal performances by Japanese horses. Usba Tesoro winning the Dubai World Cup. Sharky, that horse was last. If you look at the aerial of that race, it's ridiculous what it was able to do on the dirt track, coming from absolute last and just surround or loop the whole field, and it was the strongest horse on the line. And we thought that's just incredible. But the performance of Equinox has probably overshadowed everything. How good is this horse? I know we've just seen Maddie's in love with Flightline. Before that, we had your Frankels. Is this the next superstar of world racing?
I think you have to say that at this point. That was only his seventh start.
He won the Aria McKinnon, the Tenno Show.
Yeah, second in the Derby in Japan. He was turned over there, and the Guineas too, I think.
He looks like a giant too, to look at. I don't know whether he is, but he races big.
Not sure how big he is, but he's a son of Kittisan Black. And just phenomenal performance. It had Black Caviar feels about it. You know, when she'd just dominate. Mm. Jockey wouldn't move. Nolan's sitting there just swinging on her, just having a good time. Everything else is getting hunted along to try and stay in touch. Like, that was an incredible performance.
And Kittisan Black was the superstar of 7 or 8 years ago, who won a few of those big races as well. The big thing now is, can the Japanese do what they've been unable to do, even with Deep Impact, and finally win an arc? And it's all about the weather. Are they ever going to... Can this one go in the wet by any chance? Or they can't win arcs because the arcs are usually run on soft ground, but the arc is the target again. And I think it'd be the biggest thing ever in Japanese racing if they can win the arc. When Deep Impact went over, there was literally hundreds of Japanese media there to cover Deep Impact.
Maybe this is the horse.
Biggest story in world racing this year is, can this horse win the arc?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe this is the horse to do it. He is a phenomenal talent. That was a joy to watch. You actually watched it and thought, what am I witnessing here? Like, he just destroyed.
He's a gorgeous looking horse too. And it was so soft on the line.
And it's, I think from down here, because of that nature of our industry where we just shuffle them all off to start and we don't unearth absolute greats, unlike maybe Winx, we have to treat the world as a global village to get the fill, that sort of that adrenaline rush that we get from great horses. Because to be honest, I've only had it in recent times from foreign horses, not local horses. You know, Flightline, Equinox, those sort of horses. So be nice. And Winx was the only previous Australian one in that category. So
it was interesting looking at the Beaten Brigade's comments, including Damien Lane, who finished sixth on Win Maryland, another Japanese horse, who said travelled nice on the fence, but she couldn't finish off from that strong tempo. It doesn't matter anyway. Equinox is just a very special horse. Charlie Appleby said, I wouldn't mind having one of those in my stable. Pretty much everyone that was beaten was in awe of what the winner Equinox was able to do.
Yeah, it was incredible to watch.
Where to from here? Like, well, how do they get from here to Paris? Do they go and compete in the Queen Anne or something, or do they go and run in a lockinge? Do they go home to Japan and then fly over again? I don't know how it plays out.
You would think they would go back to Japan and regroup. Well, forget about the Japanese horses for a second. What Japanese trainers
are
so good at travelling their horses,
yep,
aren't they? Whenever they go, the horses invariably perform.
Who's the one who took the horses to the Breeders' Cup and had wins in the Breeders' Cup? There's that one trainer.
I can't recall.
We never celebrate their trainers enough. I think
it was.
We probably don't give the human element of Japanese racing enough credit, do we?
No, I don't think we do. And maybe that's the language barrier and whatnot, that we don't sort of hear from them a hell of a lot, and they let the horses do the talking, for lack of a better term. But their ability to travel horses anywhere in the world, whether it's America, Europe, Dubai, Australia, when they go, they win.
Brave Smash is doing well.
Senor Toba ran in the Dubai World Cup.
So did Russian Emperor.
Yeah, Senor Toba ran last, and Frankie Dettori said, I couldn't blow my nose out there. What's his jockey comment?
Yeah, but doesn't that tell you, this bubble depth we're talking about with those horses in Hong Kong, as soon as you take two of their bigger stage performers out and put them up against an Equinox or whatever, or a Dubai World Cup, then you suddenly realise what the difference is.
That was brilliant racing over there to watch that on the weekend. A little closer to home, there's a big issue bubbling away in Tasmania, Matty. I'm not sure if many people have read it, but there was a very large article written on the ABC website, which delves into great depth about the Ben Yole situation in Tasmania in regards to his sheer dominance, where we've spoken about it on the program before. He has pretty much up to 90% of every runners at every meeting. And there's a few questions about possible race tactics, team riding, maybe some even betting activity, which is outlined in that article. What was your take after reading the article, Matt?
Well, it was really interesting. It was an expose. Obviously, something has triggered the ABC to go to the Mowbray Trots on a particular night, and that was the sort of the live element of the story that we're reading about. Actually, just taking it back even a little bit further, there's two separate major events in Tasmanian racing in the last week or so, and one of them is this story that we're talking about now regarding Ben Yole and his enormous stable. And the other is the death of Paul Geard, who is the GG's horse. So the two biggest racing enterprises in Australia relative to the local population is the Ben Yole Harness Stable in Tasmania and the GG's horses that Paul Geard and Elizabeth Geard have created in Tasmania. And now we have this massive focus on the Ben Yole operation, and who knows where it'll go. And we also have this situation with what the hell happens now with these GG's horses. So we'll get back to that.
On the GG ones, what will happen? Is there other family members who will take over the ownership of those horses?
We're going to have a chat on the Big V a little bit later on. We're going to explore this issue a lot further. So stay tuned for that to sort of flesh this out. But my understanding is that there are 8 Geared kids, and none of them have any interest in, or have ever displayed any interest in, keeping the brand going. One Tasmanian I spoke to said, if this had happened 15 years ago, it probably would have wiped out our racing industry and our breeding industry. So it's become a little bit more self-sufficient since, but the death of Paul Geard and the inevitable dispersal of those horses is massive in the gallops world. But this focus on Ben Yole, who you know, sometimes you'll take 80 horses to the races, you know, so, you know, sometimes you'll have the full field in the races. So there's obviously been someone who's expressed some concern about the nature of the operation. There are, in the ABC expose, there are ex-employees who have been spoken to who have claimed that they were orchestrating results, orchestrating how to drive the horses in accordance to a major game plan. There were examples of horses that were bell-backed with race tactics that raised eyebrows amongst competitors. There's also a strong hint through the story of the integrity officials in Tasmania being notified of various concerns over the years, and according to the story, nothing was ever done. So, and then there was an element of horse welfare as well relating to the stable itself. So we are trying to get hold of the racing minister, is unavailable. It's fair to say we've been kicked around the room a bit as far as trying to get hold of someone to have a chat to about this really important story.
New CEO of Tas Racing.
Yeah, Andrew Jenkins, I've sent a text to him and hoping to get a response from him regarding someone senior to talk to about, and to pay tribute to Paul Geard and to speculate on what this might mean in the gallops
industry.
Because
it's probably not overstating things to say that the way the situation is currently in Tasmania, if there was no Ben Yole, there would be no harness industry in Tasmania.
And that's a remarkable part of that.
And no GGs, and that would leave a chasm as well in the gallops world.
Wasn't it remarkable, the opening sort of couple of parts of that article, when the stable objected to the overseas photographer being on course, there was a threat to withdraw all their runners unless the photographer was removed from the course.
Yep.
Which, obviously, that's the end of your meeting.
Which would have called the meeting off.
That's the end of your meeting.
Should there be one stable that is so big that the dominance could mean the downfall of the actual industry?
But how do you create an alternative setup? Like, if he's the only one who's prepared to have so many horses to sustain against terrible prize money and so on, how can you say to the other trainers, oh, well, now we need you to have 50 and work instead of 10?
No, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, so but how
this is something that's developed over a number of years.
Yep.
And we're not saying that there has been anything, any impropriety at all that's been done, but when you look at it from outside the bubble, if you've got 8 of 9 runners in a race, how is there not some type of aspect of you driving as a team? You're dominating the race. So for competitors, it makes it even tougher if every horse you're up against is from one stable with your stable drivers.
Well, I remember talking to Chris Waller once about when he had multiple runners in races, and he was very mindful of being ahead of the integrity curve, where he would go to the Racing New South Wales stewards with his own grid map every day and say, look, this is they're all riding individually, but this is how we see the race tactics going. This, you know, we're being very upfront about it. And the difference with the Yole situation is, because it's just such a basic industry down there with basic stewarding and so on, is who's ticking the basic boxes of keeping integrity concerns ahead of public perception and things like that. So,
quoted in that article, the Racing Integrity Officer has looked into these issues and says that they are comfortable.
Basically that they are comfortable. So it's just such a huge story because of all the elements we've discussed, but we do need a proper response, and I'm very curious to find out what life beyond the inevitable situation of the, I can't see any other alternative other than the dispersal of the GG's horses, who, I don't know what the percentages are, but you look at any, one in every three horses seems to be a GG's horse. Yeah. So what happens now with this situation with the Geard family?
Mm. Well, so that'll be coming up on the Big V. Who have you got on?
We're going to have a chat to either Stuart Gandy or Leon Wells about Paul Geard, and we're still trying to find the right person to talk to regarding the Ben Yole situation. And the other one, we're going to have a chat to David Ellis as well about what's the reason for all these superstar Kiwi horses coming along.
Well, she was brilliant Imperatrice on Friday night.
Yeah, great win.
The Super race win. Set up beautifully for her. It was a even though he got suspended, it was a heady ride from Opie Bossom, who got back further than what he had anticipated. And I couldn't believe the speed that they went. There were some suicide tactics up front in that William Reid on Friday night.
Yeah, they couldn't sustain it. Imperatrice and Bella Nipotina, you know, Bella Nipotina, the tried and true Valley horse, running so well and on her way to Quokkas and everything else. Rockin' Horse jumping back to her right form. But, yeah, some of that speed early. Ooh, boy, oh, boy. It was going to make it hard to sustain, wasn't it?
Cerulio Miss, she's just gone to another level.
Cerulio Miss was awesome again, just dominating from the front, running away from a handy group of mares, Maddie, without being an elite bunch.
Cerulio Miss. Well, Daniel O'Sullivan's just put through his performance ratings. Well, how's this? Weight for Age perform top rated winners. Cerulio Miss, 103.5. Compare that to 103.3 Imperatriz, less than Cerulio Miss. Arapaho 101, Cascadian 101, sort of summing up what we thought. Goldman rated the same as Cascadian, and Cascadian's an $8 million winner. Prowess only rated 100.
Goldman was Prowess was 5 links behind Cascadian. Was he, in your eyes, Shark?
Prowess is 100 and Cascadian's 101.
So what, that's
Goldman was 101 as well. So yeah, I don't know what...
I think if you put Prowess in the Australian Cup, she's not beating Cascadian. But anyway, I don't do ratings. I have respect for them, but I don't do
They're
them.
Piece of the puzzle, aren't they? Like when both Time Form and Daniel O'Sullivan kept a relatively low ceiling on Animo, that made me think that we've got to take a bit of a breath in some ways, you know?
Hey, let's take a quick break. We'll go to the break with Imperatriz winning the Group 1 on Friday night. When we come back, we'll talk about a horse that we sadly didn't have that long incentivise and wrap things up on the verdict.
Babylon Berlin up to Jigsaw. 300 metres to go. A length and a half. Imperatriz getting closer. Then came in the Congo and Bella Nipotina to the outside in the straight. Babylon Berlin has been grabbed by Imperatriz. Bella Nipotina coming at it. Imperatriz, 3/4 of a length in front. The Kiwi and Opie. It's Imperatriz wins it from Bella Nipotina. Rockin' Horse third.
Placing their opinion on the line, it's the verdict.
Persan up towards the corner at the 400. Incentivizers moving up now. Then Delphi a length and a half away, battling on from Montefilia Nonconformist. Great Houses cut the corner, followed by Jewish Homesman. Incentivize goes for home, 250 out. Incentivize races clear. 2 lengths in front of Persan. Great House, Nonconformist, Montefilia, followed by Chapada. But Incentivize is coming away. 4 lengths in front, and Incentivize, what a star, won the Caulfield Cup from Nonconformist, dead heat third person.
Yes, Incentivize, what a brief but brilliant career it was. Officially retired on the weekend, so disappointing for everyone concerned and for racing fans in general, because when he obliterated the field in that Caulfield Cup in 2021 and then gallantly ran second in the Melbourne Cup, we were thinking, what does the future hold? 13 starts, 9 wins. He won all those 9 races in a row, from a maiden on the Sunshine Coast on the 11th of April 2021 to the Caulfield Cup on the 16th of October, and then his gallant second in the Melbourne Cup. Sharky, disappointing. He was like a comet across the sky. Yeah. He was so good so quickly, and we probably never got to see the best of him, which is the saddest part.
Yeah, maybe that's the case, but look, it was a memorable spring, wasn't it, post-COVID or through COVID, and Incentivize was the beacon we all followed, Matty, and enjoyed.
We don't make them. We don't make horses like Incentivize. That's why he was such a significant horse, because we talk all the time about these. The good ones happen to be New Zealand or We Breed Sprinters. He's a one in a gazillion horse here. He was a Australian-created star stayer. You don't say that very often.
The Peter Moody angle, you know, the Caulfield Cup, everything else. But the other angle that probably shouldn't be forgotten about was the role the horse played in the reinvigoration of Brett Prebble.
Yeah.
And his return to that. And remember some conversations we had on this program with him post at Maccabi Diva and the Turnbull, and it put Brett Prebble back in the spotlight, didn't it?
Did indeed.
Well, and you wonder bred by Steve Tregay, back of Burke, trainer for us living down here, obviously coming from northern Queensland and racing through the lowest of lowest classes to get to where it got to. It was a fairy tale type story.
Definitely was. You wonder whether they paid the price for that Melbourne Cup in the end. Not saying they should or shouldn't have run in it or anything like that, but think the problems emerged as a consequence of running that brave second to very elegant, and they'll never take that great second away from his CV or his career, but you just wonder whether that was the race that probably
it was a brutally run second. So incentivised, officially retired on the weekend. Hey, Apprentice Mick is in here because Mick does a brilliant job putting up all of the Twitter polls, and he's come up with an interesting one today. Good morning to you, Mick.
Morning, Michael.
I think it stemmed off the back of Matty Stewart with Harford on the breakfast show this morning, who's declared this.
If it doesn't step on a rusty nail, Goldman will win the Melbourne Cup.
So, what's the Twitter poll, Mick?
Yeah, I just wanted to address a few topics that did come out of the weekend. Obviously, we just saw the ratings come out from Dan O'Sullivan. Very good rating for Goldman in the Roy Higgins quality. But Shark kind of addressed it before. I think Australian markets have a reputation of seeing the impact of recency bias. And Goldman has gone into $11 in the Melbourne Cup in the markets. And I just wanted to get a grasp from our listeners whether it was an overreaction in the market or whether Goldman is a deserving favourite. It could be a deserving favourite, but is it too short at $11 is also another question.
But that's what we were clarifying before.
And
it's a good question, but yeah.
What's the general consensus?
There's a pretty strong favour for an overreaction in the market. 87% of voters have said it was an overreaction.
Overreaction that he's favourite or overreaction that he's the $11 favourite?
I think a combination of both.
Who else should be favourite then, off the back of what he did on Saturday? Anyway,
well, Solcombe was coming in the final stages of that race, and you get an extra 600 metres. That was one of the comments, a retweet on the retweet. So there could be a possible one that could be the favourite in that market too, but you got a good point, Matty.
Well, that'll be a good talking point, though, because people will get into that.
Well done, Apprentice Mick. So jump on the Racing Pulse poll. And Matty will have more discussions with Matty Nevitt coming up on the big V there as well. So Sharky's definite overreaction. Matty's overreaction for the price, but it should definitely be the favourite.
Correct.
Yeah. I at the moment, I can see why he's the favourite. I don't think there's any dispute there. $11 is a joke, though. There's no doubt about that. Maybe you can take a little multi. You might be able to get a little...
What is the...
I heard Richo... Equinox to win the Arc? I think it's into $7 to win the Arc.
Oh, yeah, but Arcs are always one of
them. I'd take that before I took $11 Goldman.
Just for the market creators who eventually they'll bow to our pressure, what is the right price for a favourite for the... What is the right starting point for a market for the Melbourne Cup in late March? Say an impressive horse like Goldman, I would say his right price to be half fair to the speculative
$20?
I'd say $34 is about the
You're
right starting point.
You're never going to get a bookmaker to put up
$34. No, I'm talking about what it should be, not what it will be. Like, what's an accurate reflection of the actual challenge of that horse
probably
getting to the race and winning?
Well, considering the fact that he's actually in the Melbourne Cup now, you're basically only got to worry about him not, as you say, standing on a rusty nail because he's got his ticket into the Melbourne Cup.
What if tomorrow Kay Waterhouse is reporting that he stood on not just a nail, no. but a rusty nail?
You have
nail.
To retire if that happens.
No, I'm obviously evil if that happens. So.
Oh, yeah.
There's a few SMSs.
That's really bad if you can get that happening.
White Marlin will win the Melbourne Cup. And White Marlin should be Sharky's tip is what's coming
I've
through.
I've got one on my arm.
Oh, dear.
Oh, it is. No, that's a striped, isn't it?
I don't know what that is. I guess it's whatever Marlin you want it to
You've
be,
almost maybe. Got the sticker sleeve. Hey, boys, we're going to say goodbye to you. The verdict was great. Big V is coming up very soon. And Steve-O's going to be in next. What a weird and wonderful round of footy. Sharky, you'll be up and about. Your Kangas are 2-0. Who would have thought?
No, well, I would have thought. And anybody who follows North Melbourne would have had great confidence in the young team that we're building down there at Arden Street. And the future is very bright, my friend. Never, ever write off the Kangas.
Very lucky win, too.
Lucky?
Saved by the siren, literally.
Do you know what you do? You make your own luck in life.
Listen... Anyone who'd think they were premiership favourites, enjoy it. It's been a long time since you've had two wins in a season.
Yeah.
Sharky, we'll see you on Friday. Looking forward to We go to Bendigo this weekend, and then in Sydney, it's the Doncaster, TJ Smith, and we've got the Inglis. I can't even remember. There's another group one. Four massive group ones.
Golden Mile. Yeah, we're going to Windermere Hotel, Golden Mile. I reckon it's a big sleeper, the Golden Mile, on our...
Are you going to stay up there on Friday night?
I may do that individually. The other two, Simone and Dan, are not able to do that, but I might go up there and there's a little wine bar that's also a bookshop during the day.
You might go panning for gold.
Bar, bookshop. I'm picturing that
I won't
that
be
British
doing any action on the
black books. Yeah. I reckon that's you in the back there.
I won't be doing any action on the book side of things, that's for sure.
Good on you, boys. The Big V coming up a little later with Matty Stewart and Matt Nevitt. Quick break. Steve-O after this.